From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ollie. It's Tuesday's programme. It's been a warm day in South Manchester, but it's been a bit wet as well. But very, very humid today. The 16th of April 2019. Thanks for choosing the Richie Allen Show. Always good to be with you.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, later on this hour, I'm going to be speaking with a lady called Shirley De Bono. Shirley's son, Sean, was sentenced, given an IPP sentence many years ago. He was sentenced to a minimum of 2 years for robbery, but in fact ended up in prison for nearly 9 years. IPP sentencing was abolished back in 2012, but there are scores of men still in UK prisons. Having served their sentence, their initial tariff should have been out in 2 or 3 years, but 10, 12, 15 years later remain in prison. What's IPP sentencing? Why was it abolished? And why are so many men still in prison today when they should have been released? This is a scandal. It's a national scandal, this. It really is. We'll find out what IPP sentencing is, and we'll find out more about these men when Shirley De Bono, who's a campaigner based in Cardiff, whose son has gone through this, she joins the programme at this hour. Lots of other news to talk about as well. We'll have a look at the Notre Dame story in a minute or so. As usual, you can tweet the programme and join in by simply sending a tweet to at Richie Allen Show. That's my Twitter handle. It's at Richie Allen Show. All right. Yeah, coming up for 5 and a half minutes past the hour. Busy old day. Lots going on. There's lots going on besides Notre Dame in Paris. Not that you know it, really. This IPP sentencing thing, which was introduced by David Blunkett, Tony Blair's Home Secretary, back in... Now, I know this. I've done my research. I'm not going to refer to my notes. But it was back in the late 1990s, wasn't it, when this was introduced? It was abolished in 2012. It's incredibly serious, this. And we're going to get into this hour. And, you know, I didn't even mention I was going to be talking about this today. But because I've been tweeting one or two people about it, I've received nearly a dozen emails from people directly affected by this, and it has gotten a little bit of coverage in the media here in this country, but not anywhere near as much as it should. IPP stands for the Imprisonment for Public Protection, and it's a dreadful thing. It's an Orwellian thing, and I bet you most people listening to this programme have never heard of it. Anyway, we'll get into it later on this hour. So Notre Dame, then. Well, what a spectacle. What an absolute spectacle. What a production by the mainstream media here in the UK and around the world. Sky News has been there since last night. Every major news network has had people broadcasting from there. The fire is out now and was put out overnight. But all the live programmes are coming from about a kilometre away from a burned building. It's mad stuff, this. Here's a flavour of it. This was Sky News at 4 o'clock UK time, so just over an hour from now.
From Paris, the city still coming to terms with the inside.
Arrested following a study
of
police in our oceans.
Don't ask me what happened there.
From Paris, the city still coming to terms with the devastating fire here at Notre Dame. Hundreds of Parisians have been thronging the banks of the River Seine, trying to get a glimpse of the now partially destroyed cathedral.
So hundreds of Parisians thronging to the Seine, and the city is struggling to come to terms, or trying to come to terms, with the disaster.
And hundreds of millions of euros have been pledged to help rebuild the cathedral, with some of France's wealthiest families leading the way.
So, some of France's wealthiest families, some of them connected to the banking financial elites of Europe have been pledging hundreds of millions to restore the building. This is interesting, isn't it? Because it's been widely reported that the restoration project that was underway was grotesquely underfunded and, in fact, had no money. And it was a desperate situation, right? Okay.
So far, around 500 million euros has been raised. Almost 400 firefighters worked...
They won't need that, will they?
...through the night to bring the fire under control. The cause is not yet clear. The bells of Westminster Abbey will toll at 5:43 this evening to mark the moment the fire began yesterday.
Yeah, this is the madness. Anybody who's listened to the Richie Allen show, anybody who's read the stories on my website will know this is an area of research which I think it's exclusive to me. Nobody else has been doing this in the last few years, evaluating and critiquing how the media operates and how society is interacting and engaging with the media being a sort of a conductor waving a baton, manipulating the emotions of the wider public. This is hilarious. So at 5:43, the bells at Westminster will ring out because at 5:43 yesterday, the fire started. This is deep stuff. I'm glad to be alive. Are you? Are you glad to be alive? I'll be able to tell my grandchildren. I was there when Notre Dame Cathedral burned not quite to the ground.
Yesterday, experts from Historic England also plan to offer support.
Experts from Historic England plan to offer some support. William Shakespeare is going to rise from the dead, as is Baden-Powell, as is Cromwell.
Their French colleagues. The Queen has sent messages of condolence as well.
The Queen sent messages of condolences. To who? Nobody died. There was a fire. Condolences to who? Right? It's a building. It's been around a few centuries. It went on fire yesterday. One firefighter was hurt, God love him, but he's going to be okay. This is not a story, is it? It is. It's like 2 minutes every hour. Oh, by the way, the Notre Dame Cathedral was on fire this evening. Firefighters are tackling the blaze. Emmanuel Macron and his great-great-grandmother attended this. Oh, his wife attended the scene. We'll keep you updated if there's any fucking news. But no, they stay on a live shot of a fire for hours. For hours. Wow. What else?
In a statement, the Prime Minister said that President Macron has pledged to rebuild the cathedral, and I've conveyed to him that the UK will support this endeavour.
We better not support it. There's people starving in this country. There's hundreds of thousands of people on the streets. We better not write a cheque to those frogs over a building.
However, we can. As we saw last night in the swift and heroic action of first responders, France has huge professional...
Here we are again. Heroic action of first responders. They're fucking trained firefighters. It's their job. They sit there playing cards and eating licorice all sorts or... gummy bears. And then the bell rings and they hop into the fire engine and they go to put out fires. It's what they do for a living. They're not heroes. It's their job. Heroic first responders rush to the scene and all of that jazz.
Professionalism in dealing with emergencies of this kind. I pay tribute to the firefighters and all those involved. When it comes to the task of rebuilding, French craftsmen and women are among the finest in the world.
Yeah.
As they prepare to embark on this daunting task, we stand ready to offer any UK experience and expertise that could be helpful in the work that lies ahead to restore this magnificent cathedral. Well, my colleague Alistair Bunkle has been looking at the tragic events since fire broke out on the Île de la Cité behind me shortly after 7 o'clock last night.
Profound stuff this now.
As
the evening stretched into night, you could see the flames rise against the Parisian sky. You could only watch in horror along with the throngs of people on the Seine, weeping into their handkerchiefs, comforting one another.
You watch and fear the worst. For Notre Dame. Within hours, the fire spread rapidly across the wooden roof. 13,000...
That's what it does to wood. Fire burns wood, it's an amazing thing.
13,000 oak trees that were cut down 850 years ago to build it were destroyed in a matter of hours. At its height, the fire appeared unstoppable. the world-renowned stained glass windows were consumed by flames. When the spire bent, then fell, so too did the hearts of a watching nation. The tireless efforts of 400 firefighters looked hopeless.
But...
President Macron came even as they were still battling flames burning in the roof above. Parisians stopped in the streets, open-mouthed.
Are you listening to
some
this?
Some sang hymns to the Virgin Mary as the building named after her burned nearby.
They sang hymns to the Virgin Mary. The Virgin Mother. Some trick that. David Copperfield, Houdini, Penn and Teller and Paul Daniels couldn't put their heads together and figure that one out. God, the ultimate illusionist. Mad shit. Total blanket coverage of it. And last night, as it was burning, Dermot Murnaghan was in a Sky News studio, and with him via video link or via a sound booth was a guy called Alistair Bruce. Do you know Alistair Bruce? You know that guy? He does all the ceremonial and royal family wedding coverage. He's the guy with the plummy accent who does live commentary for hours about men in red uniforms sitting on horses. He's amazing. The level of bullshit that he can vomit out for hours on end about the traditions of this country. And he was banging on in his plummy accent. And I've never seen anything like it. We were looking at a still shot, a live shot of a building. And speaking over the shot was Alistair Bruce saying stuff like, begun in 1160 under Bishop Maurice de Sully, completed in the mid-13th century. It was here in 1944 that the liberation of Paris was celebrated with the singing of the Magnificat. 1804, we saw the coronation of Napoleon I as France's empire. Notre Dame, it's amazing. Its facade looming large in the Parisian architecture and all that. Vaudeville. And when he ran out of oxygen, it went back to the studio. And Dermot Murnaghan was like, thanks, Alistair. We've had a tweet from Theresa May, and we've had a tweet from Tony Blair, sending his condolences to the French people. Madness. Masquerading as news. It got even more surreal this afternoon, I swear to God. Sky went live to Yorkshire to speak to Dave. Dave's a firefighter in Yorkshire. Dave was bewildered because he's never tackled a cathedral fire before. He'd put out a few chimney fires before, and once upon a time, he blew out a match. So he hadn't a fucking clue what to say. Yeah, I've fought some fires in my time, yeah. And Dave, what about those firefighters last night in Paris? You can understand what they would have went through. Yeah, well, they would have got a call, and they would have gotten into their fire engine, and they would have went off to Notre Dame, yeah. One of the artifacts even lost in the blaze was a fragment of the cross that Jesus died on. Been laughing at this today on Twitter, saying that if you collected all the fragments believed to be from the cross that Jesus died on, holy Jesus, from all the churches around the world, you'd have enough wood to build a massive city. But the crown of thorns survived. The crown of thorns survived. Donald Trump was tweeting out, fly planes over, drop thousands of gallons of water. What a fuckwit. Melania was like, Jesus wept. Shut up. It would have collapsed what was left of the building. You genius. It's insane, this media world, this world that gives rise to this paradigm, this reality that gives rise to spectacles like this, with people sitting down eating crisp sandwiches and munching on popcorn, watching this crap dressed up as news. It's astonishing to me. And all day today as well, and probably for a good portion of the day tomorrow. Madness. Let's move on. Waterloo Bridge in London was basically commandeered today by sweaty protesters. These doom mongers. What are they called? Extinction Rebellion. The woolly jumper wearers with the braided hair. With their braided beaded hair. Dirty bastards. Maybe it's because I'm jealous, because I'm a baldy, ignorant, Irish, foul-mouthed bastard, maybe. They blocked up London again today. Hundreds of them have been. Hundreds of them have been arrested, thanks be to Jesus. I've been looking at it thinking, where's Boris Johnson and his water cannons? they must be stored somewhere, these water cannons that Bojo bought from the Germans. And then they haven't been used, thankfully, because protesters should not be hosed. We all have a right to assemble. We all have a right to speak. We all have a right to challenge the establishment, except these lunatics. Hose them off the bridge, I say. Sky News' Enda Brady spoke to a few of them. I think he had to put Vicks Vapor Rub on his top lip, though. Here's Enda Brady.
Che, talk us through what you were doing here and why you are disrupting the capital in this way.
We're here as a reaction to the government's flagrant and willful disregard for the ecological crisis that we're currently facing globally.
How long are you going to stay here? I mean, is this finishing today or?
As long as it takes.
Have you got the manpower to achieve that? We've seen quite a few people arrested here today.
Absolutely, but we can always do with more. You know, the time for rebellion is now. Join us in this fight because it's one that we can't afford to lose.
The Metropolitan Police are saying that 500,000 people have been disrupted here in the city today. 55 different bus routes have had to be diverted. What do you say to those Londoners who have not been able to do their daily work routine, their business, getting around the capital today?
We are, you know, deeply, deeply, sincerely
Join
sorry.
The revolution.
You know, it's unfortunate
we are
that we
rebellion.
Have to
The rebellion needs you. You at home.
I'm talking to
right
him.
Now.
I'm talking
the
to
rebellion
him.
Needs all of you right.
This is another smelly guy who's just jumped in and interrupted the interview.
All of you right yeah. now, here today, this is not a middle class issue.
Right,
this is not an upper class issue.
It's
this is a
fight.
Working class issue. Every person on this country needs to come out and protest. We're here for 2 weeks.
The poorest will be the ones most affected. And you know, Sadiq Khan's new ultra low emission zone is a political farce. It won't affect, it won't create the sea change that we need. It will only affect the poorest in society.
Yeah, God forgive them because they know not anything. They know nothing about climate change or any of that old jazz. We'll leave that one there then. So, yeah, disruption in London today, but apparently many of them have been arrested. I don't support people being arrested, but look, the fact is they don't have any case. Carbon emissions are not driving climate and are not changing climate on this planet. There's no evidence for it. I said this yesterday. I'll leave it there. You might have heard me interview Peter Tatchell last night. It was an interesting conversation with Peter. I'm a bit disappointed. I've known Peter for years and I'm not talking now behind his back. And I'm not saying anything I didn't say to him last night. But I can't believe that a guy who supported the Christian cake makers, who didn't want to put a same-sex marriage positive message or a positive message about same-sex marriage on a cake. Peter supported those people quite rightly. And in fact, when I interviewed Peter, I took the devil's advocate position and I argued that the Christians should have just written the message on the cake for the gay couple, just being the devil's advocate. But I was delighted at the time that Peter stuck up for the Christian couple, even though I'm not a Christian and I don't believe there's anything wrong with two men or two women being together. I never have done and I never will, right? Right. But I was disappointed with Peter last night and I did say it to him and I argued with him vociferously on the programme. I believe that the government should not be intervening to silence people just in case some gay man gets offended. This is about Israel Folau, the Australian rugby union player who has been fired and won't play in the World Cup because of a litany of comments. Well, one comment that he made where he named a litany of various groups, fornicators, atheists, gays. We're all going to hell, according to Israel Folau. Good for you, son. You think that if you want. Excuse me, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But there's another story, and I did try and get some comment on this today, but I failed to get somebody to come on. You might have been reading today about a woman called Christy Higgs, who is a Christian woman, a devout Christian, who's been an assistant teacher at a secondary school for years with an unblemished record, okay? But she was sacked after posting a petition against trans issues being taught at her son's primary school. This is a terrible thing. She's working for a secondary school. It's got nothing to do with them. She's an assistant. She's good. Unblemished record. She's popular. Her son goes to a primary school, a different school entirely. She put a petition up asking that transgender issues not be taught to him. He's a five-year-old and she's now being fired. These are dangerous times, folks. They really are. And don't think for a minute that just because I say these are dangerous times that I've got any sympathy with any one outspoken person. Now, in her case, I do agree they shouldn't be teaching anything to 5 and 6 year olds about relationships. Leave them alone. I've said this a million times. Let them figure it out themselves, right? In the case of the rugby player, when he says gays are going to hell, I don't believe there's such a place as hell. And even if there was, I don't believe that any God would take two people who love one another and who've built a life together and chuck them into hell just for that. It's bullshit, right? But I will fight forever from the safety of my studio. I will fight forever for the rights of these people to say these things that I think are very stupid. Now, Billy Vunipola is a very good rugby player, plays for England, and he's been given a formal warning by the Rugby Football Union because he defended the Australian rugby player. The Australian rugby player, Israel Folau, said, "Hell awaits gay people." I know I've just said that, just in case you've got a short attention span today. Vunipola liked this post and put these words, "People should live their lives how God intended." That's all he said. He said, "People should live their lives how God intended." You could take that to be criticism of Israel Folau's post. He could be saying, "God, live your life as God intended," meaning don't be telling people they're going to go to hell. God wouldn't like that. But no, it's been taken to mean that he was endorsing Folau. I think he was endorsing Folau, as it happens. So he's been warned and he's expressed genuine regret and he's been told, so he has, that he is now on probation for 5 years. For 5 years. Because he liked the post and because he said we should live our lives as God intended. Russia Today, we like it, don't we? It does some great work. I've been a big champion of Russia Today for many years, even though it is financed. It's true what Google says on YouTube. It is true. It's a Russian government station. I've no problem with that. It's the same in every other country in the world. But, you know, I acknowledge that. But I like RT. Bit disappointed overnight to see that RT is pushing... It's not pushing vaccines, but it is kind of weighing in on the side of those who want to eliminate the criticism of vaccines from social media. I didn't think that RT would be all for that. Here's an RT broadcast from yesterday.
The World Health Organization reports that cases of measles worldwide have tripled since last year. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says one-third of the deaths from the disease occur in India, adding that misinformation on vaccinations is spread through one of the country's most popular messenger services, WhatsApp.
We are seeing a phenomenon which is emerging, is the use of social media and use of mass media to spread rumors regarding vaccines, and that ultimately leads to vaccine hesitancy. We took a lot of preemptive steps working very closely with government, prominent media houses, including the print and the visual media, and countered it with positive stories, countered it with right information, and countered it with right messaging in the public space.
Dozens of schools in the city of Mumbai have reportedly stopped doctors from vaccinating students. In New Delhi, too, parents are opposing vaccinations due to rumors that vaccines lead to mental health conditions like autism. This false information is being spread mainly through social media apps.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. The RT line on it is vaccines are good and disinformation about vaccines is harmful. That's disappointing by RT. But on the other hand, maybe not surprising, because RT is taking it in the neck from all quarters. There are politicians in this country who have called for RT to have its Ofcom licence removed, meaning that you wouldn't be able to watch it on satellite television in the UK. So maybe RT is minding its P's and its Q's. But it's no less disappointing, so it isn't. This is the Richie Allen Show. If I caused any offence to any Christians earlier on, I couldn't give a shite. This is the Lighthouse family. I'm only joking. I don't want to offend anybody. We're going to get serious in a couple of minutes with a very serious subject. Back after Ocean Drive on your Richie Allen Show. It's true. Music from the Lighthouse family on the Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly 29 minutes to 6. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining it. This is a really, really serious issue. And it's something that had come across my desk once or twice in the last couple of months, but I couldn't kind of get to grips with it. I've been looking into it in the last few days and I've been pretty shocked by what I've learned. Let me read you from the BBC website this week. A man remains in prison after he was jailed aged 17 for stealing a bike. He's given up hope of being released, his family has said. Wayne Bell, Withington in Manchester, was given a now obsolete type of indefinite sentence for robbery in 2007. He's 29 now, he's still in prison. He suffered a mental breakdown and feels trapped after being turned down for release many times. The parole board said it's handling cases as quickly as possible. He received the imprisonment for public protection sentence, that's the IPP sentence, in 2007 after he was arrested for taking a bike from a boy he assaulted in Withington in Manchester. He was told he would serve 4 years for the crime. His father said his son had gone before the parole board every 2 years but had been denied release for a number of reasons, and he hadn't been able to access courses to tackle issues including anger management because they were oversubscribed. 29 years old and he's been in jail all this time. This IPP sentence was introduced in 2003 by David Blunkett. Imprisonment for public protection sentences were designed, according to the government, to detain serious offenders, mostly sex offenders, who were perceived to be a risk to the public. The Home Office at that time estimated they'd imprison about 900 dangerous criminals under the sentence, but it hasn't worked out like that. People for misdemeanour crimes and much less serious crimes have found themselves locked up for years and years and years. Now, these were abolished in 2012, but they weren't abolished retrospectively. So that means that scores, like dozens and dozens and dozens of prisoners, are still in jail for things really, in some cases they shouldn't have went to prison for at all, and in other cases they should have been out in a year or two. My guest is a campaigner on this issue. I'm delighted to welcome her to the programme. Her own son, Sean, went through this for the best part of 8 years, 9 years even. She'll tell us about Sean now. She's on the line to us live from Cardiff. Let's welcome to the programme Shirley De Bono. Shirley, you're very welcome to this programme. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yes, things are good at the moment. Like I said, carrying on campaigning.
Thanks for coming on, Shirley. It's a big deal, this, and I meant it when I said a few minutes ago, I had no idea the scale of this. I thought that maybe a few guys were kind of, they fell by the wayside or they slipped through the net, but I understand that, and we'll talk about your son Sean now in a couple of minutes, but I understand now it's well in excess of 100 people are trapped in jail who should have been released years ago.
Yeah, there's a couple of thousand trapped in
couple
the
of thousand.
Sentence.
Couple of
a couple
thousand.
Couple of thousand, yeah.
My God, go ahead.
Yes. As you said, the IPP sentence was brought out to keep perpetrators of sexual violence, and I will mention his name, the John Moore boys. He was all over the news over a year ago. He's the black cab rapist. He raped a lot of women, drugged and raped them. He had 9 years with an IPP added. He came to light because he was actually going to be freed.
Yeah.
And against you know, like people like ourselves, you know, this is not fair when we got people like Wayne Bell for stealing a bike that's not getting out. And anyway, his release was knocked back. He won't be coming out. And I do agree, John Warboys, the IPP sentence was meant for John Warboys. He's a perpetrator of sexual violence. It was meant for terrorists, paedophiles, but it wasn't implemented properly, like you say, and he was dished out to people like Wayne Bell. He stole a bike. There's another boy, James Lawrence. He was 19 years old in 2006 when he stole a bike. They sentenced him to just 8 months in prison, added the IPP, and James Lawrence is still in prison now. He went in as a teenager. He's now a grown man. He is struggling with his mental health issues at the moment. Then you've got Leroy Douglas, 19 years old. In 2006, he stole a phone, sentenced to 2 years, and the IPP was added. He's still in prison today. Then you've got David McDonald in 2005, sentenced to 11 months for minor crimes. IPP added, he's still in prison today. Knockback after knockback. He went to a DCAP prison, which failed him. Foolishly, he had one glass of beer to celebrate his progress. Stupid thing to do, but didn't warrant a recall. He's back in closed conditions indefinitely, and he has since attempted suicide and self-harms. Then you've got Ian Hartley. He was recalled unjustifiably after serving 13 years of a 2.5-year sentence, and he's still awaiting his parole hearing. Then we've got...
Hang on a second, Shirley, because we've got loads of time here now, so there's no need for us to be rushing here, right? So I know when you do radio, you might get 5 or 6 minutes. We've got 20 minutes, 25 minutes even from here. We've got loads of time, and I want to hear about Sean, your own son, because even though Sean is out, you're very worried that, you know, if there's any perceived slip-up, that he could be recalled at any time. This is serious stuff. They said they wanted to reserve IPP sentencing for the most serious of offenders, rapists and paedophiles and terrorists, meaning that they might give them 10 or 12 years, but they would pop an IPP on so that towards the end of that sentence, they could evaluate whether the person was fit and ready to be left back into society. On the face of it, it sounds okay. What I'm struggling to understand is, when they said it was only for the worst of the worst offenders, how did IPPs come to be popped on to lads like your Sean and lads who stole a phone and lads who stole a bike? How did that happen at the time without a big public outcry?
It goes back to the Blair government when they were looking for votes to come into government. They wanted to be seen to be tough on crime. So then they introduced this IPP sentence. You know, it was just to gain votes so they could, you know, get into government, of which they did. People were voting for them. They thought, right, let's get tough on crime. And it's a good thing to get tough on crime because the likes of, I'll mention him here now, Aaron Madden, 19 years old, he had 2 years for fighting with his own friend in 2006. He deserved 2 years. Give him a day to release. He could have come home, got a job, you know, moved on with his life. But sorry for Aaron Madden. You know, his mental health care was ignored within the prison system, and he's now being transferred to a mental asylum.
My God.
You know, and this sentence wasn't meant for people like them. But where the Blair government were doing it for folks, they implemented it very, very quickly. It wasn't implemented properly. So it wasn't, you know, judges didn't realise there wasn't a cap on it. People were being sentenced to 28 days in prison for having an argument with his wife. He went to prison for 28 days, but they added the IPP sentence. And that man spent, I think, 11 years in prison. It wasn't implemented properly. Judges didn't know about it. Barristers didn't know what the IPP sentence meant. And even those sentenced to it in 2005, 6 and 7 didn't even know they were on a life sentence through the back door until they actually got to the term of their tariff. And then even me, with my son's case, Sean Lloyd, he was sentenced in 2006, January 2006, for a street robbery. He stole a phone. He actually gave it back to the victim, apologised, and then ran. He had a 2.5 year tariff for that, and he deserved it. He did deserve to go to prison.
Is this your son? This is your son, Sean, we're talking about now.
Yeah.
Now, this is Sean, right? Now, can I just jump in? Because you're incredibly honest, and I was reading a lot about you today. Your ears must have been burning, or your cheeks must have been burning, Shirley, because I was reading loads about you today. You're incredibly honest here. Sean was a bit of an idiot. I've been a bit of an idiot myself. And he stole something. He tried to make amends for it. He confessed up to it. He returned it, and he went to court, and he was given 2 years, and this was in January 2006. What sort of a lad was Sean? Had he been in trouble before, or what sort of a lad was he?
Sean started hanging around with the wrong crowds when he was, you know, younger.
Yeah.
So if you left your bike outside the shop, Sean, with his friends, would take the bike. If you left your laptop in the back of the car, they'd take the laptop. You know, he was a naughty boy. And he, you know, this is what led to the IPP sentence when he stole the phone from somebody. You know, and he had the IPP sentence added to that 2.5 years. He deserved the sentence. He did the crime. There is a victim at the end of every IPP prisoner's sentence. There is a victim, and we mustn't forget these victims.
Yeah.
But with this IPP sentence, it's gone on for so many years now that even these prisoners are becoming victims themselves.
It's amazing that he spent over 8 years in prison. I can't get my head around this. He wasn't violent. He wasn't a thug. He was an idiot, and he was hanging around with some bad lads, and if he saw an opportunity to nick something, he would. How could it be justified that he'd be locked up for 8 years? How did that happen, Shirley?
As I said, the IPP sentence wasn't implemented properly.
Yeah.
So when Sean was gone into his 2.5 years and he didn't get his parole, that's when I realised there's something not right here. I need to investigate. I need to start researching, which took me about 3-4 months to actually find out what the IPP sentence was. And when I found out that it was a life sentence through the back door, you're then thinking, where do I go for help? Where do I turn? Who, you know, my son is locked up for life for stealing a mobile phone. You know, like you said, he's an idiot. He got into trouble. And you do the crime, you do the time.
Yeah.
We all agree that. But when they're doing their time 3, 4, 5 times over, it then becomes cruel and inhumane. You know, it's barbaric. There's just no light at the end of the tunnel.
So Shirley, he didn't... Did he see somebody from the parole board after 2.5 years? Did anybody see him at the end of his tariff? What did they say to him? Surely they must have had to give him a reason. After serving 2.5 years, he should be going home to his mum.
Okay.
He should be... What did they do?
Yeah. When you're sentenced as an IPP prisoner, you have all these programmes, courses that you have to complete. Victim awareness, the CALM course, the, you know, all these different courses, behavioural courses, loads of courses. But because instead of, say, 1,000 people receiving this IPP sentence, there ended up 10,000 IPP prisoners in prison instead of 1,000. So prisons were becoming over, you know, they were overwhelmed by this intake of IPP prisoners. So they never had the resources there to cope with them. So people on an IPP sentence wasn't getting to the courses. They weren't available in every prison. You could be transferred to another prison, without any warning, and that prison don't have the courses, and you're coming up to your next parole. So the paroles were getting knocked back, and that's a big reason why a lot of IPP prisoners were not getting out, because they couldn't prove to the parole board that they were safe to release, because they couldn't complete the courses.
Through no fault of their own, Shirley.
Through no fault of their own. You know, Sean completed his courses. He had his first parole, but they knocked him back in because that's what they were doing in the early years. You know, when you were sentenced to an IPP in 2005, 6, 7 and 8, they weren't getting out. They were being kept in because even if they did complete all their courses, which was rare, you know, it's very rare for me to be able to say, my son completed all his courses.
Yeah.
but that's because I was pushing and pushing all the time for him. But he still didn't get out. So whether you completed your courses or not, you wouldn't get out of prison, because there was always the probation would put a report in for you to do further work, you know, so you would have to do more courses.
You'd have to do more. How did he cope with more that courses through those years?
He didn't cope. Back in 2009, I think it was, 2010, Sean has had enough of never knowing when he's never coming out, you know, when he's not going to get out of prison. So Sean put a noose around his neck one night and he was going to hang himself. And at the last second, he decided not to.
Thank God.
Anyway, I never knew this. He never ever told me this until he was actually released in 2014. He tried to take his own life. And the reason he stopped at the last minute is because he knew I was out here fighting for him, you know, and trying to get justice for IPP prisoners as a whole. And, yeah, so he tried to take his own life, which, you know, when he told me, I was devastated, absolutely devastated. And there are people, Tommy Nicol, he had a three-year tariff in 2009. In 2015, 6 years into his sentence, he received another knockback from parole. He was told his next review would be in 2017. On the 21st of September 2015, Tommy was found unresponsive in his cell. He was taken to hospital. His life support machine was turned off. His family were never contacted about Tommy. He died alone without family even being informed that he was even in hospital. So IPP prisoners, they're treated as not a person. They're treated as like, just, you're an IPP prisoner. And that's why I mention all the names of these IPP prisoners at the beginning of this interview, because they got
they're
names,
real people,
they're people's
yeah.
friends,
they're real
people's
people.
Partners.
You know, you said there were thousands of people, because this, when this was abolished, it wasn't abolished retrospectively. So there are thousands of prisoners still in limbo. Do you know, I've had a tweet from, by the way, folks, if you're just tuning into the programme, we've got an extraordinary lady on the line. Shirley De Bono was live on the line from Cardiff, and she's been campaigning for a number of years to raise awareness about these IPP sentences and the fact that it's left men, you know, in limbo in prison for years for things like stealing a bike. This is amazing. I mean, it's hard to get your head around this. David Stanford has tweeted the programme, and I think he's had a eureka moment. He's talking about how in some states in America, they introduced the three strike and you're out rule, whereby you might commit, in California or in some other states, you might commit three minor offences, but because you've committed three offences, you go to jail for life. David is saying, calling it the three strike rule would have been a bit obvious. Got to get the lifelong slave labour system somehow, the corporations demanded. So he's saying that basically the IPP system is our version of the three strike and you're out rule that's been adopted in so many states in America. What do you think?
I think it's right. I think IPP prisoners, they're a money-making machine. These big mega prisons that they're building in the UK at the moment, they're being built with big factories inside them, okay? So they need to, you know, and they're building these prisons to hold, you know, like 6,000 prisoners. So these factories are being run by private companies, and they're going to be making millions and millions and millions of pounds. And these prisoners will be working in these factories earning £12.50 a week. Why don't these big companies build big factories in, you know, in poverty-stricken areas like parts of Cardiff, parts of Manchester, parts of Liverpool, and employ the local people to go and work there and pay them a decent wage? It's a money-making machine.
It's privatisation, Shirley. This is how they've privatised, or how they are privatising. It's an ongoing process to privatise the UK's prisons. This is an absolute scandal. It's evil beyond belief. they're building mega prisons. I know this is true. You're absolutely right. I'm not going to challenge you because you're right. And they're building them with factory facilities in them, and they yeah. need to be filled with young men and women, don't they?
Of course they do. And they're all on, I mean, they're earning £12.50 for their wages, these prisoners, of which they have to buy. People think like prisoners are living in, you know, they got TVs, they got pool tables, they got this, they got that. But prisoners, they earn their privileges through good behaviour. And if they're not good, they'll have their radio took off them, or they'll have their TV took off them, or their wages will be cancelled when they're, you know, when they're working, you know, whether it's cleaning the wings or working in the kitchens, they won't have their wages, so they won't have no canteen. IPP prisoners, I think, suffer more than a determinant prisoner because they've been a million miles from home all the way through their sentence. A lot of them have given up. They, you know, they've separated themselves from their families now after all these years because they want their families to get on with themselves, you know, because they're trapped. They feel like they're trapped in the system. And IPP prisoners, I think, are penalised more. How can I put it? I'm trying to. If an IPP prisoner say misbehaves on the wing, he don't just have his TV took away from him or his radio from him.
Yeah, yeah.
He also gets an adjudication, so when he goes in front of the parole board, that is a big issue, and he has to fight for his freedom, and a parole board can refuse his freedom because he's had this adjudication where he might have even used, you know, like swore, you know, or you know, minor rule, when a determinant prisoner makes the same mistakes, breaks the same rules, but still gets out of prison.
They still get out of prison when they're... You know, when this was all being introduced, I was working on radio in Ireland, and I knew nothing about this. And you have to wonder why the likes of Amnesty, why the likes of the Labour, you know, proper socialists, I know it came in under a Labour government. Where was the outcry? Let me just repeat, Shirley, what you said there. We're talking this evening, listeners, about the IPP sentencing initiative introduced by David Blunkett in 2003, which meant that a young man or a young woman could be given a tariff of 2 or 3 years, 4 years even. But it's to be left open. It's to be left to be determined at the end of that sentence if they were to be released or if they were to be kept in jail for the protection of the public. So that's indeterminate sentencing. It's a form of torture, in my opinion. As Shirley is saying, you commit robbery tomorrow, you steal a phone, you steal a car, whatever sentence you get, if it's a sentence because you've already committed crimes in the past and they say, right, you've done it several times before, it's 5 years. Right, that's 5 years. You know that you'll get out in 3 with good behaviour or you'll get out in 5. But these indeterminate prison sentences have been... There must be torture for these people still in prison, Shirley.
It is torture for them because as the years have gone on, because some now are 12 years into the sentence, and they've seen people coming into prison having committed the same crime as them or even worse crimes and doing their sentence and getting out, and they're left in there to languish, you know, and, you know, it is affecting their mental health state. So much so that around 68 to 69 IPP prisoners a year over the last 3 years have been transferred to mental institutions. And I've got that from the Freedom of Information Act. And also, it's, you know, like there's over 137 IPP prisoners that went in as young boys, 17, 18, 19, 20, that, you know, they're so over-tariffed that they've committed suicide. And Tommy Nicol is one of them. They can't, you know, they can't cope with the sentence. When they see people coming into prison, committing even a worse crime than them, getting out. And then how do the government justify this? How can they possibly justify people being locked up with no date of release in this country of ours where we're supposed to have the greatest judiciary in the world, justice system? And we haven't. Because the government did not want people to know. They didn't want the public to know that this IPP sentence existed.
Are you disappointed, Shirley?
The carpet.
It was all swept under the carpet. And this is the point I come to, because I, like most people, spend, well, I should say like most producers, I spend most of my days reading the papers. And until very, very recently, there's been no mention of this, apart from the story I mentioned earlier on about the man from Manchester, Mr. Bell, Wayne Bell. The media has been kind of complicit as well, because it's not covering it. I mean, this should be a national scandal. There should be a national outcry. You're doing your best, aren't you?
It should be a national scandal, yeah. Because, like I said, Theresa May, the Prime Minister, she actually went on to the Andrew Marr show about the IPP sentence. And the only reason she went on there, I hope I'm allowed to say this.
You can.
The only reason she went on there is because it was the time when John Warboys was being considered for release by the parole board. And John Warboys, one of Theresa May's friends, was one of his victims. Because I've actually written a letter now to David Gawke and Rory Stewart. They're the Justice Minister and the Prison Minister, daring to provoke them to go on to the Andrew Marr show and explain to them that not all IPP prisoners are like our John Warboys, that we have got our, you know, Aaron Maddens, and we have got our, you know, Danny Weatherspoons, and, you know, all these people. And, you know, what's his name? Wayne Bell.
Ben Gayton. Yeah.
You know, he was recalled Ben Gayton. He's got a partner and three small children. Although he's innocent of any, you know, crime, he was accused of, proven innocent, but they're still keeping him in prison.
That's a concern. Sorry, Shirley, that's a concern for you as well. On the Theresa May thing, you think that somebody connected to her might have been a victim of Warboys. Let me just remind our listeners. John Warboys is a fairly sick man. There's no two ways about that. And we don't know how many women he drugged and sexually assaulted in his cab. And there was an outcry when he came out of prison, because a lot of people felt...
He didn't actually come out of prison.
No, he didn't. He was due to come out. That's right, he was due to come out.
Yeah.
And people were horrified, saying, how could he come out? This is not a long enough sentence. And that's when we heard, for the first time, a lot of people about the indeterminate sentencing and that. And as you said, it was designed originally back in the early 2000s for those types of cases. Now, on prisoners being recalled, there's a lovely picture of your son, Sean, on the change.org petition page, which I'm going to tweet out now in a second. And I urge people to go and see this. You've done really well, Shirley. You're an incredible campaigner.
Yeah, it's on change.org. Let my son rebuild his life.
50-odd thousand signatures you have. It's incredible, really. You've done amazingly well there. And you reckon that the way this works is, even though Sean is out now and he's rebuilding his life and all the best of luck in the world to him, but he could be recalled if it's perceived
Sean
that he's in breach.
Been recalled.
When was he recalled?
Sean was recalled in January, and not for committing a crime. He hasn't committed no crime. He's recalled. I'm actually going to meetings and got my Welsh Assembly member on board, and my MP is on board. My doctor is, well, Sean's doctor is on board, you know, our GP. Sean should not be in prison right now. We were seeking help for Sean, and I think because we were seeking help for Sean outside of probation, I think this is why they've recalled him. The probation service has failed my son on a massive scale, and it's not the first time he's been recalled. This is Sean's third recall to prison. Last year, April, we were having a barbecue at the garden. It just happened to be a nice day. He had a phone call from probation, and they gave him 2 hours' notice to get to an approved premises in Swansea from Cardiff. He had to go. He went to this approved premises. As soon as he walked through the doors, he was beaten up, attacked and beaten. I had a phone call at 11 o'clock at night to come to the approved premises and take my son back home, and that was from the manager there. I got to the approved premises. I had a phone call from the manager, can I please move my car up the road a bit behind the bushes so the other inmates there couldn't see me. He came out, escorted me through a side entrance, of which he then escorted me and Sean back out of that entrance to the car, and Sean was home with me then till he had this recall now. Probation have never, ever justified why they'd recalled him to an approved premises. They've never justified it, other than to say she wanted to detain him. Detain him for what? She still didn't answer. That's how barbaric this sentence is. They could just a phone call. So ever since then, Sean haven't had a phone. He don't want a phone. In case it was probation, telling him he had to go somewhere. So Sean don't use a mobile phone. And in January, they recalled him again, apparently because of his behaviour. But they had no complaints about his behaviour until they recalled him.
Because of his,
it's just a nightmare.
Because of his, I've got to say, the reason I didn't know this, because some of my listeners will think I'm slow on the uptake, is that the change.org page hasn't been updated to say that. I thought he was out because it says on the page that you're very.
Yeah, I need to update it.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know. It's news to me that he's been taken back in, and he's not been taken in for committing a crime. It's because of alleged behaviour. This is insane.
Sean had malicious allegations against him in the beginning in January, of which he went to confide with his probation officer about the malicious allegations. She decided she wanted to recall him. I phoned up the probation manager and asked her and begged her to revoke the recall, because once the investigation's over in a month, it'll prove that Sean is innocent. So Sean's in prison, the allegations have come back, Sean is innocent, and the person that actually made the allegations have made these allegations on 15 previous occasions to different people, and I just heard now from the police today that this person that made these allegations is now under police investigation herself.
So why isn't he coming home to you today then?
Pardon?
With that information, with the fact that the allegations were spurious, with the fact that the person who made them had made them repeatedly about other people, also with the, you know, added to the fact that the police are not taking it anywhere, why is your son not being left go home to you today?
Because probation have to justify why they recalled him. So to justify themselves, they backtrack and decided they've recalled him on his behaviour, which I've got proof that they've said they're happy with Sean's behaviour. Back in June, they were happy with Sean's behaviour. Sean was at probation. You know, they never had no issues with him. You know, obviously they're managing him, and you know, Sean's got his little problems. You know, he's on methadone, and he, you know, he's on so many mils of methadone every day, of which he complies and takes. You know, through the clinic, through probation.
But Shirley, how long does probation? This is what I can't understand. It sounds so punitive. How long does probation last? Surely he can't be on probation for the rest of his life. When does it
he's
end?
He's on probation for the rest of his life.
How can that be possible? That's incredible.
It's a 99-year license when you come out of
prison.
Oh,
my God. I can't believe I'm living in this country. You're telling me...
A 99-year license. This license can be revoked after 10 years.
My God.
That's yet to be tried and tested. And I can tell you now, nobody... this out right now is going to get their license revoked within 10 years, because guaranteed after those that have been out like 5 years, they get like a final warning. Maybe they were late for probation, so you get a final warning from probation not to be late no more. That final warning, even though you've been out for 5 years, that final warning that enables them to start your 10-year license. Start all over again.
So how can anybody live like that? How can any man or woman rebuild their lives knowing that there's the sword of Damocles hanging over their heads for the rest of their lives?
They can't live like it. With Sean, like I said, we were going to the GP for help and things like that for him. He was asking back late last year, like August, September, October, he didn't want to be taking any more meths. He wanted to go into a rehab to come off the methadone, as in cold turkey. But he got some little children, and he didn't want to be on meth no more. He wanted to see his kids grow up. He wanted to get a job. But probation didn't have the funding. That's all they used to say. We haven't got the funding. So Sean's meths went from 20 mils, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. Now, in the meantime, I'm looking at my son and I'm thinking, you're dying in front of my eyes, you are, son. He looked terrible. He looked all handsome. And then all of a sudden, he's looking like withdrawn. His eyes look baggy and black and sunken. So we decided to go to our GP. First of all, we went to our MP in November and asked her, could she try and get local authority funding for Sean to go into a drug clinic to go through rehab and to come off this methadone, of which she was, you know, investigating through the local authority, if we could get this. In the meantime, we went to our GP, who referred us to the University Hospital of Wales, who then referred us to a drug place called EDAS, who then referred us to the place where Sean originally gets his methadone from. It's called Defidol. Now, in the meantime, probation knows that we're looking around to try and find Sean a rehab. And I really think probation recalled him because we're looking for a rehab. That's the only answer.
My God.
Because Sean could see the only part of Sean's behaviour was looking for help for himself. Because probation never noticed themselves that he needed help. They were taking no notice. Since he's been out, he's had 7 probation officers. The one he got now, she's new to him just over the last 12 months. His probation manager is new to him. She's only ever met him 4 times and twice with me. Now, this new probation officer that he sees every week is not going to notice the change in Sean.
No.
Because that's what he looks like. She's only known him, say, a year. I say a year, about 9 months. But I've seen a change. He's my son and he needs help.
Shirley, we've had plenty of comments on this on my Twitter page. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. This is an absolute scandal. I mean, thousands of people in prison on this IPP sentencing, which is outrageous. Over 3/4 of them have completed their minimum term, and hundreds of them have actually served 5 times the minimum. And just to endorse what you said, because as you've been talking, I've been listening to every word that you've said, but I've also been bringing up some government information. You're absolutely right to say that the IPP sentence is a life sentence, and it continues when you come out of prison. Probation never ends and goes on basically from the time you come out until the time you die. It's an outrage. We've got about 60-90 seconds left on this today. Go to change.org. I have tweeted a link out to it. I will tweet another link out to it again. I think you're an incredibly brave woman, Shirley. I think it's amazing what you're doing. I'm staggered at how so many of my listeners are tweeting me now, and they had no idea whatsoever that this was going on in this country.
It's a life sentence through the back door. Through the back door. And the Justice Secretary at the time, David Blunkett, who I've been in touch with and spoken with and met, has said he's really sorry for this IPP sentence, that it wasn't implemented properly and that it should be changed to a determinate sentence. People in the parole board are saying, you know, it should be changed to a determinate sentence. Nick Hardwick is still saying it now. He was the chair of the parole board. He resigned last year. There's people in the judiciary, people in government, crying out for it to be abolished. And all we need now is for the Justice Minister, David Gook, to grow some balls and turn it into a determinate sentence and give these people some light at the end of the tunnel, some hope, put them all out of their misery and free them, you know. And those that it was meant for, John Warboys, your terrorists, your paedophiles, Resentence them all. Just give them all a date. So those that deserve it can stay in prison. And those like Wayne Bell, you know, Aaron Madden, and, you know, all these people, Danny Witherspoon, and so many, can come on with their families and get the help that they need.
Do me a favour, Shirley. Stay in touch with the programme and come back anytime you want to update us. Anytime you want. Good luck with them.
Yeah, well, I'll do that, because I've got a meeting with Rory Stewart, the prisons minister, on the 13th of May, and I'm hoping that'll lead to a meeting with David Gook to discuss my petition with him and the IPP in general, because it has got to be abolished retrospectively. It's not fair to the families either, because we're all suffering.
Of course you are. Every one of those men and women should be released immediately. Well, those, of course, that haven't committed very grave violent and sexual crimes. Listen, good luck with Sean. Keep us updated. I've tweeted a link to the change petition.
Thank you very much for letting me speak on your show and get it out there to the public, because the public needs to know.
It's great to meet people like you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shirley. Bye for now. All the best. That was Shirley De Bono there, live on the line from Cardiff. And that's an amazing thing, that when you start looking into that and you can't believe what you're reading, and you read it again, and then you read it a third time, you think it can't be right, that we can't, it couldn't be right that there are people in prison for stealing bikes and stealing phones, and they've been in prison for 11 and 12 and 13 years. Yes, they had offended several times previously, sometimes once or twice, sometimes three or four times, the same type of petty crimes, not violence, not, you know, grievous bodily harm, not just stealing and stuff. Stealing stuff to support habits and stuff like that. And then you see that they were given a 2-year tariff, but the imposition of the imprisonment for public protection order was put on it, the IPP sentence, meaning that really their sentence was indeterminate. But the prisoner didn't have a clue in most cases, because they were using legal aid and they just didn't have an idea. Oh, 2.5 years, lovely, but they didn't know. Well, in reality, you're not coming out any time for the next 10 years or more, if you're lucky. Hundreds of them in jail who have served 5 times at least the minimum tariff. We're not talking about hardened scumbags, knifers, rapists, paedophiles, or terrorists. We're talking about petty criminals, and many of them addicts, locked up for ever. She was right. David Blunkett has repented in if you want to use that word, in recent years, and has said that it's been a disaster. It wasn't meant for, you know, people like Shirley's son Sean. Amazing stuff. It's a very powerful statement she made there. Life sentence through the back door. And I think our listener David was bang on when he said that it's 3 strikes and you're out by the back door, because whatever about the United States, this vast country, this vast landscape, it's a smaller country here, and however divided we are in this country, I don't think for a minute that the people in this country would tolerate 3 strikes and you're out. So that was a sneaky, underhanded way of doing it. And she said, didn't she, massive prisons are being built in this country. They're to be run privately for profit, and they are building facilities in those prisons where people will be paid £12 a week, slave wages, by corporations who could build their factories in Cardiff, Liverpool, Leeds, Manchester, Newcastle, Sunderland. These are mad times. I'm going to quickly phone my next guest, because I'm running over time here. We're coming up for 13 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show. A lot of tweets on that. Go to Richie Allen on Twitter. Go to twitter.com, and where it says Richie, where it says search Twitter, go to a tweet. Excuse me, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter and you'll see what other people are tweeting me. Stephen Lenman then. Stephen might not be ready this moment. Stephen jumped in at the last minute. I was due to be speaking this hour with Lana Lochteff from Red Ice, but she's decided not to come on and has asked me to postpone the conversation to another time. And she has proposed another time, to be fair to Lana, and I've had a very cordial conversation with her. But I'm kind of getting the hint that maybe because of some of the things expressed on this programme about the alt-right, maybe she might be thinking twice about coming on. That's fair enough. We'll see. I hope she does come on. I think she's interesting. I think she's got interesting things to say. We'll wait and see. She's proposed next week sometime, I think. Maybe Monday, if I remember. rightly. So hopefully she will come on. Due to come on today, but told me overnight that she couldn't come on. So there you are. Hence, I asked Stephen Lenman, the great Stephen Lenman, to jump in today at the last minute, because I wanted to talk to Stephen about Julian Assange, but not only that, but also about Libya as well. Because a lot going on there, and not gotten into it too much on the programme this week, right? So, keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Francis Leader will be on the programme with me tomorrow. I'm sure that these ecological doom mongers that have been holding London to a standstill, or trying to bring London to a standstill, I should say. I'm sure Francis will have plenty to say about that tomorrow. Can't, as of yet, raise Stephen, so I'm going to take some music. And when I come back from the music, I will read some tweets as well. I've not got anything lined up there music-wise, have I? Yeah, I've got something. Right, Carly Simon, back hopefully with Stephen Lendman. If not, I'll have your tweets next, okay? Back in a minute. Carly Simon on the Richie Allen Show. The time is approaching 19 minutes past the hour. Hoping to connect with Stephen Lendman, one of my favourite journalists in the world today, and I do mean that. Extraordinary man. Go to stephenlendman.org, based in Chicago. Fantastic writer is Stephen. And he's been writing quite a bit in the last few days about Mike Pompeo, about Venezuela, of course. He's been writing about Assange and also about Libya. And I want to get into some of that with him on the programme today. It's been one of those days. Like I said, Lana Lochteff is due to be on the programme. And I might be being just a little bit paranoid, me. What it is with me in this programme, because of my take on things is very, very simple. And I've said this to you so many times, you're probably bored of hearing it. But it is that identity politics is... Well, it rains. It rains now, today, more than ever before. And that bracketing yourself into an identity group, pigeonholing yourself, assigning yourself to a group, whether it's a political group, whether it's a social group, whether it's a group to do with your sexual identity, and then deriving your worldview as a consequence of your membership of that group, and because of the importance that you give to being a member of that particular group, and then seeing the world through the eyes of the group think, okay, which is the direct result of being, you know, I'm a Labour member, supporter, I'm a Tory, I'm a Lib Dem, I'm a Green, you know, I'm a Socialist, I'm a Conservative, I'm a Neoliberal, I'm a anarcho-capitalist, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Therefore, from the get-go, from the point that I begin to understand or evaluate a problem, this is where I start from. Well, you shouldn't really start from there. You should start from, you should start from the point of view, from the get-go, from the premise that, well, what you are is a completely unique, totally individual, one-off, marvellous creation of whatever created us, energy, spirituality, individuality, individual thinking. You are you. There's nothing like you in the world. Yes, you might share some characteristics with others. You might be gay. You might be straight. You might be a Catholic. You might be a Jew. But those... And I'm not saying that being gay is a choice, by the way. Don't think for imagine that I am. I'm not saying that. I don't agree with the fundamentalist Christians when they say stuff like that. Let's leave gay or straight out of it. But everything else is an identity that you've given to yourself, or that your parents gave to you and you didn't unburden yourself of, right? That you grabbed onto it. And when you got old enough to know better, you didn't. And you ran with it and you stuck with it. And everything then afterwards is seen through the prism of the identity. And I've always believed this. That's a lie. I've come to believe this in the last few years. I identify as nothing. I sometimes say to guests on the programme, yeah, if you want to pigeonhole me, I'd be an old Bolivarian Chavez Ian, if you want to say that, that's given the chance to paint the world. No one man or woman should be given the chance to order the world as they would like it. Nobody should, of course, but if I was given the King Solomon powers to do such a thing, yes, Salvador Allende's vision for Chile, that's how I would see the world, given the chance. But I tried to avoid seeing problems and seeing issues from the point of view of, well, I'm a socialist like Salvador Allende. It's not good. It goes nowhere. It only ends up, only bad comes of it. Because I've gone down this road in recent years, I've ostracised everybody. Because on the hard left, or left social democrats, or on the alt-right, or on the right, they don't like me. Because what I say is, in my opinion, you're all wrong. Right? Which is an incredibly arrogant thing on the face of it to say. You know, in my opinion, you're all crazy. But of course, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you're all crazy. What I'm saying is, I will never agree with you that great social change and humanitarian change for humanity, will come from joining a fucking club, wearing a rosette and saying, I'm with Jeremy Corbyn. I'm with Donald. No, that's where I say you're all wrong. What that's meant in recent years, and it's funny, because as somebody who's a vastly experienced producer of programmes, remember I got my start producing other people as well as doing late night radio. I was a producer. It was my job to build programmes for people and to say to my presenters, hey, what time do you think this is? We're on at 10 o'clock this morning. This is who you're speaking to in the first hour. This is who you're speaking to in the second hour. These are your notes. Do your job and we'll have a meeting after the programme at lunchtime. That's the sort of producer I was. I cracked the whip, I don't mind telling you. I didn't actually. But anyway, so it's funny to me that these days I book people to come on the programme and increasingly as we go along, dear listener, more and more people pull out. They pull out before the programme begins. Which doesn't frustrate me, doesn't infuriate me. It leaves me with a wry smile. Why pull out? Well, that Richie's alright, isn't he? But then, didn't Richie say in a monologue the other day that Trump is this and Trump is that and all the rest of it? Well, I can't go on there. Because I disagree with that. And this is what is happening to the social media generation. People are being changed. Their DNA is changing because of their addiction to social media. Because of their addiction to the sound of their own voice. The echo chamber. Surrounding themselves with those who agree with them. Oh, well, if I go on that Richie Allen show, he's gonna disagree with me. I might do. I'm not going to insult you or embarrass you or try to make you feel small or try and score points off you. I don't do that. I like to speak to people whom I disagree with. But increasingly, and more so in the independent media, people don't want to be wasting their time engaging with those who see the world differently to them. That's not good. So I'm not saying for a minute now that that's why Lana from Red Ice decided not to come on the programme, but it was fairly abrupt. And I'm thinking, you know, it came overnight and I had a lot to say about Notre Dame, as the Americans would say, Notre Dame. And I had a lot to say about the alt-right and their idiocy last night in saying that Europe is under attack. When nobody had any idea how the church or the cathedral came to be on fire in the first place. You big fucking hypocrite, Richie. No, I'm not. I was reporting last night on the fact that Christians in France have been complaining about a spate of attacks on churches. And I never said that wasn't going on. even if it is going on, and even if there is an Islamist angle to it, you don't know for a fact that what happened at Notre Dame last night had anything to do with Islamists. But the alt-right, and even one or two people that I'm kind of fond of, who've been on this programme, jumped in with 2 feet and put out the truther tweets for their followers to lap up. You know? Europe is under attack. Wind your neck in, you muppet. We're all under attack. Every one of us. Not just Muslims or Christians or whatever. Look, something has gone wrong with old Steve in there. God love him. He said he'd come on today last minute. And I know he was there. But he's not now. I reckon there's been a bit of a screw up. Not with him, probably with me, because as I was rushing around today, I probably gave him the wrong time. And this is a possibility when you don't have a producer or an editor and you're on your own. I probably miscalculated the time zone he's in. He's in Chicago Central Time. I probably gave him Eastern Time, knowing me, because that's the sort of idiot I can be. But look, I'll get him on tomorrow. Francis Leader is on the programme with me tomorrow as well. Shirley De Bono's extraordinary conversation with me is well worth sharing. So when the programme is on social media in a couple of minutes, as it will be, please share the programme. Please share the programme and encourage other people to listen to what she told me, all right? And I'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 then. And we will have a 2-hour programme tomorrow. This one has been packed. Thanks for listening to it. Thanks to Shirley De Bono. Until we speak again, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Bye now.